you're down and troubled.
So, have you ever felt that nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very, very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Sounds nasty, doesn't it? Well, it is nasty. Now, we have an exciting show planned for you today. Medical advocate Kathy Pendleton, her advice on how to manage your hospital stay could very well save your loved one's life and possibly even your own. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. Now, as I said, I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, they're selfless, not selfish. They should be a little more selfish, but they're selfless and they're sacrificial. Oh yeah, and they are very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs like above their own. Come on, folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency and the cabin pressure begins to drop, put your oxygen mask on first before you attempt to help your child with their mask. And the reason they tell you all that stuff is because they know that you will likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then, guess what? You won't be of any help to anybody with anything. And caregivers are exactly the same way. We also talk about grief and loss here, and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing, gosh, just where we need another thing, and that's called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there's only one way to get out of the grief process, and it's to go through the grief process. You can't go around it, you can't go over it, you can't go under it, you got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcasts and my books and my videos and my blog. I know it sounds like it's all about me, but it's not really. It's all about you. So just go to my website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com, or try the shortcut, DaveNass.com. That's Dave, which is my first name, and the first four letters of my last name, which is N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, DaveNass.com. When you go to my website, you will want to take my short quiz, and it's called, Are You a Candidate for Burnout? And guess what? Just for doing that, I'm going to send you a free link to my first book I wrote, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. This is the story about my amazing wife and mine, because I'm pretty amazing too, I guess, I'm told. But, it's still getting rave reviews on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, so please don't miss out on this very informative quiz that will assess where you are in the burnout process. And the best part is you're going to get my book absolutely free just for doing that. Amazon is still selling it for almost $10, so it's a great value. Now, I want to take this moment to thank my guest last week, Lon Kiefer, known as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers, with his very unique message to caregivers to help them understand why they do what they do. So you caregivers, if you really don't understand why you keep, burning out, there's a mentality. Caregivers are kind of special people and they do things a little differently. And it's a great interview. I highly recommend it. Just go to my website, DaveNass.com, and go to the uplifting interview tab. Can't even remember my own website. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com or DaveNass.com. Click the Inspiring Interviews. You can also get it on iTunes by clicking the Radio Show tab. And just a reminder that all of these shows are recorded podcasts after they go live, so you will never miss any of them if you don't catch them live. All right, enough of that. I'm going to go unmute my wonderful guest now, Kathy Pendleton. Kathy, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Oh, good. I love it when the guest is there and we don't have to go hunting for you. Well, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for patiently sitting through all the introduction stuff for our first-time listeners. Now, Kathy,
okay.
Thank you so much for allowing me to interview you today. I really, really appreciate it. You know, hospitals can be very intimidating. I don't have to tell you, and I don't have to tell me, because I know. And so can doctors sometimes. Even nice doctors can be intimidating sometimes. It's like this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde thing. Now, my listeners need to know how to talk with these people. My wife would not be disabled today with her speech impairment and her paralysis on the right side if I knew 19 years ago what you know. So what do you think about that?
That would be good. That would definitely be good for all of us.
Let's get into the questions. All right. Number one, I'm not quite sure what you mean by participate. So doesn't everybody kind of participate in their own family's health care plan? I mean, we go to the doctor. We explain him what we're feeling. He gives us medication. We take it. You know, what am I missing?
So, you know, actually not really. We don't. When we go to the doctor as patients, mm-hmm. we go into a kind of a fix-it mode. And this goes for doctors, too, when they go in as patients. Because we all really want to be taken care of when we're sick and we don't feel good. Mm-hmm. But it's very important during your doctor's visit to tell them what's going on with you, down to the very last detail. Because
sure.
That's where the doctor's analysis is going to begin.
Mm-hmm.
Often that description that you're making can be interrupted or cut short because maybe the doctor thinks they know what you've already said, or they're anticipating, or they're writing notes or something. Or another thing that can happen is that when you go to the doctor's office, you're really feeling bad or you're in pain, and that can inhibit your ability to think and respond to questions.
Mm-hmm.
So you might want to take notes with you and make notes about what the doctor says. And if you're really, really sick, you might want to take a friend along with you. The other thing that can happen is that when you get the diagnosis, you just take it, but you just accept it. But really, you might want to think about whether that jives with what you're feeling, if you know it, or if you do any research later, whether it feels right to you, or as you're following what the doctor's told you to do,
right.
Are you getting better? Because if you're not, you're going to have to go back to the doctor and talk about it. I'm not a medical professional, so I'm not going to go into a big discussion of the diagnosis. All I will say is that you need to mention anything that's new or different about what's going on. So if you've been overseas traveling, if you've been on a farm and you're not usually there, if you've had minor surgery like having a tooth pulled or a wart removed or having your tubes tied, those kinds of things need to be mentioned. Even something as seemingly insignificant as whether the exterminator came over recently.
You know,
and
you
then
bring up
last
a
of all,
great point. Let me just interrupt you for a second. You bring up a great point because
sure.
One of my favorite shows to watch on TV is Dr. House. Right? House. And
right.
I don't know if you've seen that show or not, but he is such a brilliant mind because he comes up with, well, what are the outside environmental factors having to do with this? You know, why didn't you tell
right.
me that you had chickens living in the backyard, you know, because stuff like that.
Right.
So you're absolutely right. Very interesting.
It's a huge impact. There's another TV show called Mystery Diagnosis.
Oh, really?
And they go through things where it's difficult to pin down what's really going on. And a lot of times it's based on the natural environment and the fact that you've interacted with something in the natural environment.
Yeah.
But the last part of this that I was going to mention is, once you get the doctor's instructions, are you going to follow them? So in the medical profession, they call this the treatment plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how many of us have not completed a course of antibiotics? We take it till we start feeling better, then we quit. And that's where all of these infection-resistant strains come from, right? Also, when the doctor tells you to rest, are you going to rest or are you going to be going away for the weekend or driving your kids back to school, back and forth to school, or going to a soccer game. Or if the doctor tells you to stay home from work, are you going to stay home from work? And if you're not, here's what I would say. You need to step up to the plate and say, either to the doctor or to the nurse, you know what? I need to know the consequences of my behavior because I can't stay home right now. If you find out you're going to be, you're really contagious and you're just going to spread it around the office, maybe you're going to change your plan and stay home. Or if you find out that what you've got could develop into something much more serious like pneumonia, maybe you'll change your mind and stay home.
Good point. Excellent.
Yeah,
because
so
those kinds of things
are really important.
Yeah, I don't know anybody who follows those kinds of directions of don't, you know, just stay in bed. Even pregnant women with tough, you know, pregnancies where they're supposed to be on, you know, on their backs for like 3 months. I mean, how does that happen? It doesn't happen. Well, let's get to our next question. We got a lot of questions. We got to move through. What does participation mean when a person is in the hospital where doctors, therapists, and especially nurses are all around all the time?
Right, and it's happening to you almost,
rather than
you doing it. So years ago, what I discovered was that I had a pretty clear picture of what I expected to have happen in the hospital. And what it really involves is communication. So am I going to have the opportunity to talk to the doctor? And they don't come around very often, right?
No,
so
they
am
don't.
I going
to
know?
Day, if you're lucky.
Right. And so am I going to be able to know when the doctor comes? And is there going to be time for a conversation? And is that conversation going to be in plain English and not in medical terminology? So I kind of expect that to be able to happen. If you can't talk to the doctor, talk to the nurse. So here's what I would say. Nurses are your friend. They are the ones who are with the patients. They are the ones who notice when what happens after medication is administered. They notice. They are trained to notice, and they are really good at it. So I would say be appreciative and friendly with your nurse. But beyond that,
not a man, yes.
Yeah, beyond that, this is where in the hospital is really where you need to be paying a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And my own experience comes from watching what goes on around my family members who are patients.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't spent a lot of time in the hospital myself, knock on wood.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, this is the simplest one that I can think of. When a medical professional comes into the room, or anyone, right, comes into the room, if they're going to touch my family member, they should be washing their hands before that.
Oh, good point.
And if they don't, you ask them to. They know they're supposed to. If they're irritated, they're only irritated because they got caught. So, all you know, you just say thank you and smile and, you know, and that's it. But
that takes a lot of courage, though, to tell a doctor who comes in the room, excuse me, doctor, did you wash your hands?
Well, you don't have to say, did you? You can change, and you're right. Here's the deal. You need to alter your terminology a little bit. And you can say, would you mind washing your hands? Not did you, because that's very accusatory, right?
Yeah.
And confrontational. But would you mind washing your hands? Right? It's not quite the same tone.
Yeah, or you can make it kind of funny. You can say, you know, doctor, I have a new rule in the hospital room here. It says, anyone who comes to visit my wife must wash their hands in front of me. Please don't be offended. I mean, you know, you can make it funny, right?
Exactly. You do. Absolutely.
That's what I would do.
And here's the thing. People like me, right, people like me and like you, right, we got involved in this area because something happened.
Right.
Something that wasn't supposed to happened. Right? And those things, the dire consequences of those things, I mean, it could be serious injury. It could result in a long period of illness if something went wrong, or death or near death. And that's all we want to avoid. That's it. That's all we want to avoid. So, for instance, being attentive in terms of medication can go like this. does what you're taking look like what you took before? Are there the same number of pills you took before? Is it happening at the same time of day that it happened before? Is it in the same form that it took before? Like, are you getting a pill? Did you get a pill last time? Are you getting a shot this time? And if there are any changes, ask about them, right?
Wow, that's just basic, obvious stuff, but you don't think about it, you know?
It's all basic, and yes, you don't really think about it because it's supposed to go correctly. Mm-hmm. Here's another one. How many doctors are involved in your treatment? Are there a bunch of different specialists around?
Yeah.
Plus the main doctor who's in charge? Okay, so, but the big question is, who's in charge? If there's a bunch of doctors, who's in charge?
Yeah, who's on first?
Who's on first? You got it. Are there physical, are there any kind of therapies recommended? Respiratory therapies, physical therapy? As the patient or the advocate, right, the family member who's hanging around, right, why are they doing this? What's the goal? And you should understand what's happening and why it's happening.
That's great advice. Let me ask you, have you found that hospital stays should be going the way that they should or the way that you expect them to?
So if you look at everything that goes on in the hospital across the whole range of things that are happening with you, things are going well. Most of the time, things go along just fine. But sometimes things fall through the cracks. So as a for instance, one of the things that happened to a family member of mine was that she had back surgery, and when she got up to her floor after the surgery, back into her room, no pain medication had been ordered.
Mm.
Okay? That was a major mistake. It caused her a lot of pain, lasted for a few hours, because by the time she got up there, the doctor was back in surgery again. It was not a pretty sight. But my personal experience has been that the most chaotic times are when things go wrong. So when multiple things are happening, for instance. So one particular family member had drug-resistant staph, and it was circulating in his bloodstream. And he had a pacemaker. So the pacemaker had to be replaced. And so here he is with a seriously infectious disease, and he's on a cardiac floor. And a couple of days after the replacement, he had a stroke. So now, and it happened on the weekend. And, I mean, so all of this is happening, and I show up at the hospital to visit. And so now, is anything happening? Who's in charge? Are the new things that are happening fitting in with the old things that are happening?
Right.
What's going on?
You're so right. I was in the hospital recently because I had a staph infection, the titanium in my broken arm from 14 years ago that infected. It opened me up, clean it out, close it up, and they couldn't get rid of the infection. They sent me home with a PICC line, and you know, infections are very, very difficult to get out because doctors are so quick to prescribe antibiotics. And like you said, you know, sometimes they don't finish them. And so you've really got to pay attention. That brings me to my next question. What exactly does pay attention mean? I mean, how fanatical and how obsessive should we be about paying attention?
Well, this all has to do with just being observant about what's going on around you.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, not ignoring that little voice that goes off in your head that says, is that really what should be happening right now? really, you know?
Yes, don't ignore the
so
voice.
So that's a biggie, right? That's a biggie. That little voice goes off. But for me, I divide. I mean, there's a lot going on around you, and it's not an area that any of us are really comfortable with. We're not medical professionals. So I divide things into categories to kind of keep things straight in my mind. One of the categories is, where is it happening? So are you at home? Are you in the doctor's office? Are you in the hospital? Are you in a
care center or a recovery center? Mm-hmm. Are you in a rehab center? Everything changes based on where you are.
That's
right?
True.
The other thing is that which medical professionals are involved? Is it the doctor? Is it the nurse? Is it the therapist? Is it a hospitalist? Right? A new medical designation, because your own doctor doesn't typically follow you into the hospital any longer, right? Hmm. So they have these hospitalists who are the ones who are maybe dedicated to one floor or a couple of floors and circulate and oversee the treatment plan as it's happening in the hospital. Social workers, pharmacists, things like that. Then you get with all the medical stuff, right? The diagnosis, mm-hmm. the treatment plan, the medication, right? And does all of the stuff that's going on around you make sense to you? And if it doesn't make sense to you, you need to be asking questions, right? Mm-hmm. You just need to be asking questions. And then, lastly, discharge planning, right? So when yep. you're going to leave the hospital, that plan for leaving the hospital is a biggie, right? Are you going straight home? Are there stairs at home? Is that a problem? Are you going to a rehab center? Is the rehab center near where you live so that you can still get there to visit your family member easily? Mm-hmm. Have you seen the rehab center? Presumably you chose the hospital, but did you choose the rehab center or right. the recovery center? Because if you get there and you don't like it, you need to step up. You need to call somebody. You need to call the doctor at the hospital or whoever planned your discharge, and you need to get out of there. A friend of mine went to one. She was only going to be there overnight, but the nurses were Hispanic. Her husband mm-hmm. was Hispanic, and he heard what these two – I don't even know that they were nurses, but these two nurses or aides or – whoever was mm-hmm. talking in the hall, and he heard what they were saying to one another, and he told his wife, you know, you are not staying here overnight, not even overnight. We're taking you home.
Wow.
And they left, and he called the doctor and said, we're not staying there.
What a good husband.
You need, yes, and as that medical advocate, you need to be paying attention just to what's going on around you and not blindly trusting that mm-hmm. things are going to continue to be on the up and up.
Awesome, awesome. Great advice. We need to take a break, so just don't go away. We will be right back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor. She's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You'll be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's NASS. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we're back with Kathy Pendleton, medical advocate, expert. I'm telling you, folks, like I said before, if I'd have known this stuff, my wife, who had a stroke, lost her speech, paralyzed on the right side, would be okay today. Because it was just crazy. She had her stroke on Memorial Day weekend, Sunday, Memorial Day, 19 years ago. And the hospital was like deserted. There was just like nobody working. And the CAT scan machine wasn't working right. I mean, it just everything was going on, just like you said, Kathy. Whenever, you know, kind of unusual stuff going on, not only was it the weekend staff, it was the holiday staff. So it just wasn't a good time to have a stroke. What they really should have done was send her over to the large medical center just 10 minutes further away. But instead, they sent her to the closer, little tiny hospital. And that's another point. Whenever you have a choice between which hospital to go to, you know, the paramedics want to take you to the closest one, but that isn't always in your best interest. I would take and risk a few more minutes, go to the larger one, because they've got the facilities, they've got the better doctors, they've got things that they would need, because they're probably going to end up shipping you over there anyway, so just eliminate that step. But let me ask you, Kathy, whatever happened to trusting your doctor or nurse or therapist? Didn't we used to do that in the olden days?
We sure did. We sure did. You know, take 2 aspirin and call me in the morning if you don't feel any better. So,
and they made house calls too.
And they did. They used to make house calls, right? But you know, believe me, I do trust my doctor absolutely. If I didn't, I wouldn't be going to them. But I would say this about your choice of doctor. Do you really like your doctor? Because you need to, right? This is a
some
person
people don't,
that...
Some people don't have a choice. Maybe, you know, a terrible health plan, you know, that they can't get out of, Obamacare. So you're talking to some people who have no choice. But, yeah, I understand what you're saying. Go on.
You're right. And if you can vary it, and let's face it, none of us really like choosing a doctor. So I would certainly say to have a recommendation when you go to the doctor, when you choose your doctor, and go with them and concentrate on the things that are important to you. Is it important to you that your doctor be able to answer your questions?
Sure.
And I mean in terms of time, right? You might not want to, if you can avoid it, you might not want to go to a clinic where the appointments are set at 15 minutes only. You might want to have a more relaxed relationship with your doctor, or find an office where the nurse can answer your questions if you can't spend time with the doctor. But even if you've got a doctor that you can relate to, that you feel comfortable with, mistakes can happen. So as a for instance, I take thyroid medication. And years ago, they decided that they would prefer to give me a generic. And I took the generic, but I felt the difference in the medication. And so after that, I insisted that the doctor mark the prescription as the brand name only. And eventually, it started costing me a little more money. And I was fortunate enough to be able to afford the, you know, additional $5 a month for thyroid medication. And then years after that, I switched thyroid. Anyway, the point of all of this is that when I go to the pharmacy and pick that medication up, I look at it. I look at the label on the outside of the envelope. I open it and take the medication out, and I look at the medication as well. I make sure it's the same color as the pill I was taking before, and it's the same dose of the medication I was taking before. And that's important. If it's not the same, then you probably want to move, you know, you want to ask about it, I guess, is what the
and
main
it happens
thing
to
is.
Us, happens to us all the time, and the pharmacy tells us, well, that's because we're using a different manufacturer now. I said, well, you know, it's very confusing. So
that's
I don't
right.
know. I don't get it.
Actually, you know what? That happened to me a couple of months ago. And the pharmacist where we went, I don't know what was going on with him, but my husband couldn't make heads or tails of the discussion. We ended up at a different pharmacy of the same company, and he was much easier to talk to, and we switched our prescriptions over to that pharmacy. And not only that, I told him that, you know, I was fairly sensitive to thyroid medication,
mm-hmm.
and this was the manufacturer I wanted. And
yeah.
was he going to be able to provide that on a regular basis?
Yeah.
And he said yes.
Yeah,
so that's
can,
where we go now.
Good.
Yeah. Also, the thing is that if you're taking a new medication, the pharmacist, there's always the option to have a discussion with your pharmacist about the medication, right? They want to talk to your pharmacist wants to discuss this medication with you. We've all gotten
mm-hmm.
that from time to time. And we are like, oh, my God, here's another 20 minutes that we've got to wait. No, no, no. You need to, for new medications, you should stop and talk to your pharmacist because there could be dangerous
sure.
side effects with a new medication. I mean, think of all the ones we hear about on TV lately, you know,
yep.
and they say things like, you know,
do you have
TB, right? Have you had TB?
Yeah.
Do you have TB? Check with your doctor before. You don't start taking this if you've got an infection. Oh, my goodness gracious. You know, so if there are dangerous side effects, you want to know about it. So that if it happens, you can stop the medication immediately
uh-huh.
and call the doctor. I mean, something as simple as a rash, right? Maybe the rash
yeah.
is the indicator of this serious side effect. So as I said before, when you're in the hospital, right, and there are medications, new medications, which there usually are, let's face it,
mm-hmm.
And you know what's going on, I would recommend personally talking to the nurse about what to expect. I mean, maybe they're going to make your family member drowsy, and they're not usually drowsy, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they're going to, whatever they're going to do, the nurse will let you know. And if something happens that's not what you expect, always bring it up to the nurse. Always, always, always. They're the ones who are there minute by minute. They develop a relationship with the patients on the hall as they see
yeah.
them, and they know what to expect. And they are aware of things that should not be happening.
Right. Nurses are wonderful. I think they should be paid more than the doctors.
Yeah, they're the ones who are really giving the care, right?
Sure, sure, as in any case. You bring up a good point. When you're in the hospital, you know, you don't know what you're getting. They just give you this cup with, like, 7 pills in here. Take these, you know, and you don't know what you're taking. What should you do when
right.
you're in the hospital concerning medication?
Yeah, so we talked about this briefly before, but, you know, I have an interesting story to go around with this. So, you should definitely look at what's in that cup. Absolutely.
Yeah.
If it's not what, because you're right, that's how they give them to you. And they have already taken them out of a pill bottle somewhere, you know, somewhere by the medication cabinet. Here's the deal. If it doesn't look like what you took before, talk to somebody before you take it. Are you getting that medication at the same time? I mean, some medications need to be taken with food. Some need to be taken on an empty stomach. You know what they are. Some people get their medications if they have an IV attached. Some get them by having them put into the IV bag. Some get them. Some people get a shot, right? I mean, but
yeah.
is your medication, is everything the same? If anything's not the same, anything, right? The colors of those pills change, ask somebody about it, right?
Yeah. And
then,
we have the right to question, too, right? Because I remember when I was in the hospital, they started giving me injections in my stomach, and at first I didn't say anything. I said, well, I guess it's, you know, something to do with infection. And it was painful, and it hurt, and it made my stomach a little upset. Finally, I just says, why are you giving me this injection in the stomach? She said, well, that's for acid. I says, well, I don't have acid. I don't have acid reflux, so I don't want it anymore. And I wasn't expecting them to say, oh, okay. I thought they were going to force me, but I said, cool. So, you know,
exactly.
If you don't like something, you know, ask them about it. And if it sounds like it's not applicable, tell them you don't want it.
You're right. Always, always. So I was there was this kid once upon a time, right? There's this kid who's in the hospital, and he couldn't communicate. He had cerebral palsy. But he was very alert, right? He was very alert, and he was mentally very competent, and he paid attention to what went on. But he couldn't communicate. Now, he could communicate with his mother on a tablet and things like that. It took a while. Uh-huh. So the medical professionals, they didn't have time to just sit there and wait for him to, like,
sure.
So
interpret, yeah.
He knew when this medication was supposed to start. He knew when it was supposed to end. And there was this one day the nurses were around, and he was really agitated and upset, and nobody, because he couldn't communicate, nobody could figure mm-hmm. out what was going on. His mother came in later that day. It turned out that he knew that medication that had been started a week ago was supposed to stop that day, but he still got it. He still got it. And he was able to communicate that to his mom, and she brought it up with the nurses. And, you know, this happens all over the place. What happened was that the pharmacy at the hospital had sent the medication up to the floor, and they just brought it to him.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Dennis Quaid before. I'm not familiar. Maybe there's some out there who's not familiar about what happened with
Dennis
Quaid.
So this was very, very, very sad. So years ago, when Dennis Quaid and his current wife, they had a baby. The baby was in the hospital, and the baby had, I can't remember what condition, but the baby was given, there was an infant dose of a blood thinner that this baby was provided for a what's that thing that they, that plug that
Pointed
they...
To- A
they
syringe?
Put into your body to no, it's
oh,
a
the
little
IV.
Plug that they keep in your body to provide medication
line.
Through.
Pick line.
A pick line, and they always give patients who have those a little bit of a blood thinner to keep this line from clotting your blood, you know, from clotting and blocking the line. Turns out that at that time, the containers for the heparin is the blood thinner. The containers for heparin for the minuscule dose and for the adult dose were nearby one another on the shelves, and they looked very, very similar. So this brand new little infant was given an adult dose of blood thinners. And he had even asked the question, you know, are you really sure that you should be giving this to my baby, right? Anyway, there you can't be too vigilant. The child survived, and you know, I guess all's well that ends well. But we all need to be very, very vigilant when we're in the hospital. It only takes a second for things to go wrong, and for us to scramble around then dealing with the consequences.
Sure.
And it's just better to be alert.
Safe.
Right away.
Better safe than sorry.
Better
and on
safe
that note,
than sorry.
And on that note, we're going to take another break. Don't go away. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassar.
And we are back. And I am learning so much listening to Kathy Pendleton. Kathy, did you learn this the easy way or the hard way?
Both. So I worked years ago in computer software and customer support, and I worked with a nurse who taught me a whole lot because we were writing software for home health agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned a lot from her, and as a result of that, the rest of it was OJT, right?
On the job training.
and also, you know, I blew up a few times and then had to backpedal and apologize to people because I got really, really angry.
Yeah. Well, you know, this just seems like an overwhelming job, being vigilant and you know, how much time and energy does it all take to watch the doctors and watch the nurses and watch the drugs and you know, watch the needles they're sticking in you? I mean, it just seems like a lot of work, but I guess it's worth it because your loved one might die if you don't.
Right. Absolutely. It does take the time, and it does take a lot of attention. On the other hand, it's your body and your health, and it's your loved one's body and their health. So, you know, nobody else is going to pay more attention than you.
It's true.
The thing that I would say is that if you're having a tough time wrapping your head around all these things that are going on, mm-hmm. when you're in the hospital, I would suggest keeping a written diary of what goes on. You can keep a written, you can get a spiral notebook. I don't mean an itty-bitty one,
mm-hmm.
but a spiral notebook, right? And then put the date and keep track of everything that goes on in the hospital room. So who comes into the room?
Mm-hmm.
A log, absolutely. Who comes in? What time did they come in? What did they do? Did they write on the chart? Did they give medications or you know, use their stethoscope or take the temperature or take your family member to the bathroom or just write it all down.
And remember the nurses' names. You're going to have about 6 nurses, you know, throughout the course of your stay. You need to write them down. Remember those nurses' names. That's another way to get on their soft side is because, wow, they're
absolutely
remembering my name. You know, I'm going to treat them good. Not that they don't treat them good, but you know, it's always nice to have someone like you than to have someone not like you. You just get a little more, no matter what it is.
You do. Absolutely. Absolutely. That makes a big, big difference. And write down the name of the person on that log,
right.
The name
mm-hmm.
of the person who came in the room, not just that it was the physical therapist, right?
Yep.
Write down their name, too.
And those evaluations are good as well, you know, when you go home. They say, oh, please let us know how we did. You know, well, you know, if a nurse did a great job, write her name down because you know what? You might have to go back there again and she's going to remember, oh, that's the guy who gave me a great review or whatever.
Absolutely.
Well, don't you get exhausted as a caregiver family advocate? I mean, do you ever get burned out?
You know what? I have been fortunate in that the incidents that I've been participating in have not gone on for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And I have had other family members who can take over for me. But one of the things I focus on is that this is an activity of love. I am expressing my love when I do these things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm expressing my love. That's really what I'm expressing to my family member. Also, on the other side of that is take care of yourself. Right?
Absolutely.
In the course of this, eat nutritious food, drink enough water,
mm-hmm.
bring water with you into the hospital room, in a bottle or, you know, some kind of a water bottle. Take breaks and walk around. Don't just sit there bored. Bring a book that you can read. Relax, right? As much as you can relax, relax, mm-hmm. right? Here's another one. Go home, right? Go home. If you can go home, go home.
You know, I slept in the hospital for 6 weeks. They let me sleep in the bed down the hall when my wife was in the hospital for 6 weeks. And I basically lived in that hospital. And I felt like I had to because it was my wife and I didn't know if she was going to live or die. But it's really hard as I think back, you know, now I'm the caregiver's caregiver. But back then, you know, I don't think I would have listened to people telling me, you know, eat right, rest right, why don't you go home, you know, take a shower, whatever. You know, it's just so hard, but you've got to do it. You've got to do it.
Right, absolutely. And I slept in the hospital when my husband was in the hospital. My stepmother sleeps in the hospital when my dad is in the hospital. I mean, I think we all do it. And if we're sleeping, that's great. But, you know, I don't know where you were able to take a shower. I wasn't able to take a shower. Kind of a no-no, right?
Yeah.
So you've got to go home. At some point, you've got to go home. If you have other family members around, definitely pull them in, right? And let them help. They want to help, right?
Yep.
If they're asking
to
help.
They
sure do. They definitely want to.
Now, you know, what kind of breaks can a person take when they're in the hospital all the time? I mean, you say go home, but, you know, do you recommend them doing something strange, like go to a movie for 2 hours just to clear your mind? I mean, or is it outlandish to even think of doing something like that in an emergency situation?
Oh, no, I think that's great. One of the things that's the hardest to do is to disengage your mind, right? Mm-hmm. So you leave the hospital, and what do? You get on the phone, and you call all your family members who live out of town. And then you repeat the same story over and over and over again, right?
I hate that.
Running through the same thing over and over again. And so you really don't disengage your mind. I mean, I've gone to help my in-laws, and what I find happening is that I bring work with me to do or books with me to read, and that just doesn't happen. Disengaging your mind from that and relaxing really is the hardest thing. So I think going to a movie is fantastic.
Well, good. I thought I was just crazy. Well, in the last minutes of the show, Kathy, and I thank you again for all of the wisdom you've given us. I mean, who knows how many lives you're going to save and how many disabilities you're going to avoid by just people following your advice. And 'cause this isn't just today. You know, this is a recorded podcast that's out there on the website, on the internet forever and ever and ever. Long after you and I are gone, it'll still be out there ministering to people. So there's kind of immortality associated with this broadcast. Now, do you have any additional tips that you found to be beneficial? I mean, any take-homes that they can, you know, just become more emboldened with the intimidating hospitals or the very knowledgeable, intimidating doctors? How can people who feel like they want to say something build up the courage and the confidence to do it, even if they're a shy, you know, inward, introverted person?
So what I would recommend is I did a lot of reading. And if you look at Amazon, there are a number of books on patient safety that weren't there 10 years ago. If you can just go onto Amazon and search your search criteria is patient safety, a lot of that. Also, there is a group called the Society for Participatory Medicine. It's www.participatorymedicine.org, and they are making strides in improving communication between the medical community and the patients. The other thing is to relax a little bit and breathe before you jump down someone's throat. So hold on to your temper, be nice, think about the fact that really everyone is doing their best.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you see that the nurse, if you're just, you know, if you're going to talk to a medical professional, it's a nurse especially, and it's not an emergency, and you notice that they are rushing around, be respectful and considerate. You don't really know what else is going on mm-hmm. on the floor. It could be that someone else's family member is experiencing an emergency. And with the nurses, be chatty, be friendly, be appreciative. You know, they will remember you for that. And mm-hmm. as you said, remember their names, and they will appreciate that for sure. Be very observant, and once again, be nice.
Yes, nice goes a really long way. You know, when I was in the hospital, well, we don't have time for my story. Maybe next time. So, Kathy, thank you again for allowing me to interview you, and thank you to my listening audience for tuning in today and every Wednesday live at noon Pacific Standard Time. And don't forget that all of our shows are recorded podcasts, so you can listen on the same link any time of the day or night, 24/7. So they are also on our website, DaveTheCaregiver'sCaregiver.com, and the shortcut, DaveNass.com, N-A-S-S, as well as iTunes. Those links are all on our website under the radio show tab. By the way, when you are on my site, please don't forget to take the quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout?, so that you can assess where you are in the burnout process and get your free copy of my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. You will be so encouraged and uplifted by doing so. So until next week, thank you, Kathy. Thank you, my audience. We will see you again. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver radio show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.